You're listening to Under a Pile of Books, and in this episode, I sit down with all of the SPIFBO winners so far. We have a wonderful chat about the self-published fantasy blog off, their experience in it, some of the camaraderie they've built, their take on self-publishing, and a whole bunch of other stuff as it relates to all things self-published fantasy. I have a hard time imagining a better way to close out Self-Published Fantasy Month than with this episode. So I hope you have a great time listening. Well, hey everyone, I am especially excited about this podcast episode because I am here with a number of our winners of the Self-Published Fantasy Blog Off. So if you are not familiar with the Self-Published Fantasy Blog Off, you can just plug that into Google and you will find plenty of information on it. Started by Mark Lawrence. It has been going there have been 5 complete years and it's in the midst of its 6th year. And so I'm going to ask each of these authors, each of these SPIFBO winners to kind of go around and introduce themselves briefly here.
Okay, we can go backwards, I guess. I'm ML Wong. I wrote The Sword of Kaigen, and that won the most recent SPIFBO, which is SPIFBO 5 that wrapped. Well, it wrapped just in 2020, but it started in 2019. And The Sword of Kaigen was a Japanese-inspired military fantasy, so that's me.
I forgot I'm backwards. I guess I'm next because we're missing Zach Pike at the moment. So I'm Rob J. Hayes. I won the 3rd SPIFBO with my piratical swashbuckling adventure Where Loyalties Lie. And I was also a finalist in the 5th one with Never Die, my Asian inspired martial art thing.
Hey everybody, I'm Jonathan French. I wrote The Grey Bastards, which won SPIFBO 2. I don't even know what year that was anymore. I think that was the Half-Orcs Riding Hogs book.
Hey, everyone. This is Michael McClung. I wrote the one with the longest title, Thief Who Pulled on Trouble's Braids, which is basically a fantasy hard-boiled noir thing with lots of swearing and knives.
This is why you don't get authors to describe their own books, because we all just go like, yeah, it's a thing and the stuff. And yeah.
I wrote the words.
I always think it's awesome, though, to hear authors describe their own books, because, like, especially as someone who reads and reviews books and stuff, you know, I'm constantly trying to think about, like, them or whatever. And I feel the same way whenever I'm reviewing a book. I'm like, it was great. I loved it. And read it, please. So, so thank you all for being willing to come on and talk a little bit, with me here today, about SPIFBO and sci-fi fantasy and all of that. So, kind of first question for you, and you can toss this around or go in whatever order, but, what was the experience of not only participating in SPIFBO, but winning the whole thing? What was that experience like for each of you?
Long.
Nerve-wracking.
If you make it as far as that, it's long. I mean, at least for me, it's almost like you forgot it was going on by the time it was closing. I mean, it was exciting. I mean, I didn't watch it as closely as I think some people did, just because I'm not very social media active, and I just kind of lurked in the background and was vaguely paying attention. I was still on Facebook at that time. I'm not anymore, but I was kind of paying attention to the groups and all that, but I wasn't really engaging the way a lot of the contestants were. And I think it didn't really start getting real until you make the top 10. And then that's when you kind of start, at least for me, sitting up and paying attention. But you didn't want to pay too much attention because you get your hopes up and you start getting a little, at least I shouldn't be speaking these general terms. I was getting superstitious. And, you know, thinking I was going to jinx it in some way. And I'm just neurotic enough at one point I thought the whole thing was rigged. I was for sure. I thought that whoever fantasy faction, just cause they seem to be the big judge in my year, I thought that whoever they picked was going to be, I was playing these mind games with myself and it was all just total crap. But, you know, you just start like wondering about certain aspects of it and then you try to ignore it and come back. So it was exciting though. I mean, life changing and career changing, but it was such a random thing to do for me. Cause at that time it wasn't, I mean, probably more so for Michael, cause he was the first year, but for the second year that I was in, it wasn't as big as it is now. Starting to kind of really did it, second year was the one that kind of got it some more attention. And it just seemed like kind of a thing to do, and don't really have a lot of high hopes for it. And then when it went as far as it did, it was pretty amazing.
Yeah. The first year, nobody knew what the hell they were doing. I mean, people were competent, don't get me wrong. But, you know, it wasn't so serious. You didn't have so much organization and so many people just glued to their, you know, refreshing. Mm-hmm. It was cool. Don't get me wrong. And it was exciting. But, you know, the focus, and it was said several times by Mark Lawrence, like, this is a contest with no award, you know, which would made it amazing that someone was at the end. This, Jonathan was saying, someone actually came on and posted anonymously, hey, this whole contest is rigged, right? I'm like, why would anyone cheat for a competition that has no award?
Everyone wants that wand, man. Everyone wants that wand.
Yeah, the wand didn't exist.
Yeah, there wasn't even a wand. Right. I kind of like posthumously got a wand.
You know? Retroactively, we don't want to say posthumously. Retroactively,
just kill me now. It's fine. Yeah.
I think it kind of goes in a bit of ways though, because I kind of felt during the third year there was a bit more sort of pressure, because obviously the second year everything kicked off with, you know, entrants getting publishing deals left, right, and center. So I remember, like, during the third year, everybody would ask you, it's like, oh, when do you think the publishing deal is going to come along? And I was like, it's not happening. Just leave me alone. So it kind of felt like there was an extra bit of pressure on it there to, you know, if your book did well, you were going to get a publishing deal. And yeah, I don't think that was ever going to happen, really.
Well, you know, it is the self-publishing. It wasn't ever meant to be a step. It's good if it happens, but it's not necessary.
Yeah.
I think Mark was, it still is. And I'm always very careful of this when I talk about it too. I try to be. Mark Lawrence, for those who are coming in maybe a little late, you know, the guy who started, the author that started this whole thing, like, he's very, very reticent to sort of, you know, let it be known as the contest that will get you a trad deal. And I think that's smart, because, you know, these experiences across the board are all very individual. And I do think, I mean, not to knock previous years that happened after, but I was talking to Dirk and Dirk Ashton and several other people that were involved in the contest who I've become friends with, and on my year. And I did tell him after the second year was kind of so big and got so much attention, I said, you know, this is now going to become that some authors will look at it as, oh, you have to do this thing. This is like on the checklist of those people who think there's like a checklist that you can follow to self-publish success. Like Spiffbo is now on that thing. So it went from being, like Michael was saying, just kind of this nothing thing. And then the second year, it was just sort of people who kind of happened to catch it again. And then it was just, and it got such notoriety that now it's this institution, and it sort of seems like, but I think it is important to say that, you know, it isn't meant, like Michael was saying, there really still is no prize other than the experience. You know, you're not supposed to get necessarily a deal out of it.
Now, I think people that go into it like thinking this is going to be my big break, I think they're probably going to be the ones that are the most disappointed, because it's not. There's a lot of benefits you can have from entering and doing well with crypto, but I just don't think that going in and thinking this will be my big break is a particularly healthy mindset to go into it with, especially if, you know, you then get knocked out and you're like, it wasn't my big break after all.
Well, yeah, just to come back around, the first year, there wasn't an idea of I'm going to do this to get, you know, published by one of the big five or whatever. It was like, hey, look at this cool thing I made. I want people to check this out, you know, and it was more of a DIY for the love, you know, just a bunch of people going, this is a thing that I love, you know, this genre, and I made this, you know, now tell me it's good.
Now
that's all awesome, and it's neat to hear the different kind of perspectives as well. I want to give a chance. Zachary Pike has joined us, so welcome, Zach.
Hello, thank you.
And so I want to give him a chance here to introduce himself. And then if you want, you can also comment. The question we were kind of tossing about here a little bit was, what was the experience of not only participating in SPIFBO, but winning the whole thing like for you? So introduce yourself first, and then if you want, offer your thoughts on that question.
Sure. I'm J. Zachary Pike, the author of Orconomics and Son of a Lich, in addition to being horribly tardy. So apologies to everyone for that. I think winning SPIFBO was amazing. It was fun. It was really wonderful to connect with so many authors. It got more stressful as time went on for a while. I mean, like when I started out, honestly, a couple of people encouraged me to throw my book in the hat, and I said, well, I don't want to get cut, but you know what? I'm going to do it. And I put the book out there. And then with every successive round, kind of the pressure is up. Like if I made it this far, I can make it a little farther. If I made it this far, I can make it a little farther. And Mark Lawrence is fond of kind of maximizing the pressure through kind of the reveals of the score. So I think until pretty much the end, I was on pins and needles. So there was definitely that kind of stressful aspect to it, but overall it was just an amazing chance to kind of network with people. I heard some folks talking about how in the early days, in the good old days, it was smaller and it was just kind of, you know, about, you know, kind of throwing your hat in your ring and putting out something that you were proud of making. It was fairly established by the time I entered it felt like a lot of attention anyway on kind of the books. But that kind of knit some camaraderie between myself and some of the other finalists who were particularly great to work with. So, yeah, it was a wonderful experience overall.
Very cool. Thank you. And ML, I don't know if we heard from you on that one, so I want to give you a chance to share if you'd like.
Yeah.
I mean, I was mulling this question and having some trouble with it as far as like winning versus participating. And I do think like most of the really great things that came out of SPIFBO for me happened while I was a finalist, which isn't to like diminish the value of winning it. But I think that being a finalist drew a lot of attention for one thing. So I got, it was while I was a finalist that I got reviews from some high profile reviewers, and then that represented a huge sales bump each time that happened. Winning was a sales bump. It wasn't actually the biggest one. And it was also while I was a finalist that I got to know Rob really well as the other people who were finalists in SPIFBO 5. And we still talk literally every day. And, you know, they're just there to bounce writing and marketing and various concerns off of. We workshop each other's cover art. It's awesome. And like, so for me, those relationships are really invaluable and have continued to be invaluable well past the end of the competition. And yeah, because that's, at least for me, that's something I didn't have before, because I'm not very good at networking. So my book making it to the finals, I think, gave people, it put me on the map and brought people to me where otherwise I would have had to go find people, and I just wouldn't have, because I'm not great at that online.
I actually completely agree with Miracle there, because the third Spiffer, the one that I actually won, there didn't seem to be much sort of camaraderie between the other finalists. If there was any group between the other finalists, I certainly wasn't invited. I know, I don't think there was. But then in the last one, in the fifth one, being part of the sort of like finalist chat group that we all created to diss all the other blogs and everything. No, that's a joke. I think I got a lot more out of it last year than the year that I didn't win, as opposed to the year that I did win. I think a lot of that was due to the contacts, the friends I made along the way, as they say.
Can we, while we're on this subject of the Spiffbo 5 finalists, give a shout out to Virginia, who just is like an organizing wizard, and she put together QuarrenCon, and like, so she used the little bump in notoriety afforded her by making the finals to just like boost so many other people and organize so much stuff. So if you haven't checked out the QuarrenCon stuff on YouTube, it's awesome. There's like author interviews and there's virtual panels and stuff. Anyway, that's a bit off topic, but I think that was one of the coolest things to come out of Spiffbo 5. And I don't know if she would have been in the position to get in touch with as many people. Hadn't had that finalist group. So I just think that was the coolest thing.
Yeah, I actually, QuarrenCon was really cool. And, something that I think each of you have kind of mentioned in different ways is the community, and maybe experiencing that more in some years versus other years or whatnot. Of course, there's a lot of the stress, no doubt, that comes with this too. And getting your books reviewed by all these blogs and, all that. But the community is an interesting aspect of, to me, the whole Spiffbo competition. I'm certain it's there for authors, but even, I think for readers and whatnot, there's an interesting community that has kind of cropped up around Spiffbo that's very cool to see. At least for me, it's very cool to see. So I want to switch gears just slightly here. And some of you have already kind of touched on this a little bit, but what advice would you give to self-published authors who are just starting out?
I'll jump on that. If you mean just starting out on the publishing side, that's a more loaded question. So is this way: if you are not yet done with your manuscript, then the best advice I can give is ignore everything else. Because people I've run into over the years, even before I transitioned from self to traditional through Spiffbo, I did 15 conventions in 1 year as a self-published author. So I was running into a lot. I was, especially locally here in Atlanta, I was running into a lot of people who were starting to see me as this like voice of self-publishing. Now, this was so many years ago now that it's all changed. The technology, the way things move, like all the advice I was giving back then is obsolete, because it's just such a quick moving river. I now know absolutely nothing about the self-published world. I'm not an authority anymore. But back when I sort of was, I had a lot of people coming up to me and saying, the questions they were asking were clear to me that what they were looking for was some type of guarantee. They wanted they wanted to be told what the right path was. And if I walk this way, and if I do it this way, then I'll get this. And it's like, and then I learned to ask, is your manuscript done? And if they told me no, then I would say, you're already thinking wrong. Like, and I know that everybody has their own process and you shouldn't say that there's right or wrong. But what I'm saying is that for me, if you're looking for some sort of guarantee and it's like, well, I'm not going to start writing until I figure this out, you risk a lot of analysis paralysis. You risk a lot of wrong expectations. And I think you only get that like first book joy of just existing in that creative space where you're not worried about the business side of it, because self-publishing is you're your everything. And yeah, now there's like communities set up around it and everybody's really helpful and it's a cottage industry all over the place. And that's fantastic. But at the end of the day, you are still alone in a lot of it. And so just exist in the creative for as long as you can. Enjoy writing that first book. So my advice to anybody listening to this, if you're thinking about getting into self-publishing and you haven't written your book, forget about researching all the stuff about self, but just write the book. Just have in the book. Once it's done, then you can delve into all of the Kindle Direct and Ingram Spark and all this other stuff that's going to like become a second language to you later. But, you know, just enjoy writing the book.
I think the best advice I can sort of give to people who are starting out is to search out some of the online communities, to be honest. You know, there's plenty of Facebook groups. There might be some sort of Twitter thing. I don't understand Twitter. there's stuff on Reddit. And yeah, just find some groups of people that you can get to know, other writers, readers, all of that. Like you'll start to make some contacts for a start, but more than that, you'll get to know other writers and how, you know, that they sort of like they do things. That's incredibly invaluable, to be honest, far more so than you know, we'll be able to deliver in a few minutes on the podcast. So because it's a massive question, you know, the sort of like advice to give to a new an upcoming author or whatever. It's there's just so much. So yeah, I'd say join some online communities and get to know people, basically.
My thing was that, part of my problem with answering this question is that I'm completely not an authority on this stuff, and I always go to other people and ask about it, because I've been self-published for a while, but I was never good at it, and I feel like everything good that's happened to my books and, you know, all the exposure I've gotten has kind of been by accident. I've fumbled into it a bit. So speaking from my experience, the best advice I could give is to treat self-publishing as a process. And if you're not excited about the idea of learning things about marketing and formatting and cover art and you're researching the right cover art and managing your ads, if that doesn't sound fun to you, it sounds fun to me. But if you hear that and, you know, curl up inside and feel scared and sad and like that just sounds like a total slog, then you probably want to look at traditional, because that's going to be such a huge part of self-publishing. And in retrospect, I wish I'd taken the years where nobody knew about my books or cared about any of it to experiment more broadly and learn more marketing stuff, so that when thing like winning Spiffbo happens, you don't feel just kind of floundery and ill-equipped to handle the influx of exposure, because that's kind of what's happened to me, and I'm having some issues with it. And I feel like if I'd managed my preliminary years in self-publishing better, I might have been prepared for that if I'd done my research and made the proper connections ahead of time. Sorry, I hope that makes sense.
No, yeah, to build on what ML said, I've and going on my own history, basically, if no one knows who you are, that's like a blessing, because you can go out there and you can mess up and you can learn from your mistake, and no one knows and no one cares except you. And you learn from your mistake and you build and you iterate. So, I mean, if I was going to give somebody some advice specifically for SBFBO, I would say go and self-publish a book first, and then, you know, make all your mistakes out of the limelight. Because if no one knows, you know, who you are, then it's you're not standing there, you know, on a stage that literally thousands of people are paying attention to now with SBFBO. And it's a fantastic learning process, you know, for everything, you know, from covers to, hey, you know what, maybe I really do need an editor, that kind of stuff, you know.
Yeah, and that can start back with what Jonathan said, where, you know, just take your time and enjoy finishing the book, and then take your time and enjoy learning the marketing. And, you know, it doesn't have to be a bad thing that not everybody knows your name, because, like Michael said, then you get to make all your mistakes in obscurity, and that can be so great.
Yeah, I mean, and to give hard data to that point, Grey Bastards was the third book I self-published, right? And to this day, it's the only one I have an agent and connections now, and I am proud of my first two books, but nobody wants them. I mean, you know, so that right there is exactly what you guys are saying about how, what Michael and Mel are just talking about, how, you know, when you're, I'm not saying my first two books are crap. I don't think they are. And the people who've read and reviewed them don't seem to think they are, but they also just, they didn't do what the third one did. And somehow that could be indicative of who knows. I mean, you can unpack it forever, but you know, if you're rushing with your first book to SPIFBO in a contest of 300 people, odds are that's not going to go well.
You're going to have a bad time.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not saying, I mean, for all I know, some of you, your first book could have won it. I don't actually know. Anything is possible. I mean, there's no hard and fast rules, but, you know.
I'll piggyback off of what other folks are saying. And I'd say that one of the wonderful things about self-publishing is that you get to define what success looks like. If you're traditionally published, you kind of need to sell a certain amount of books to make your publisher a profit, or they're going to not renew you. If you had a whole 25 book series in mind and they own the first book or two of it, then you're not going to get those rights back, or at least you're going to have to fight for them. So it's possible in traditional publishing to have someone kind of come along and say, you know, good try, thanks for playing, you didn't make it. But in self-publishing, you really get to say, you know what, if I get to share this book with 20 friends and they all enjoy it, I did what I set out to do. Or if I can sell a book a day, that would be huge for me. Or I want to do this as a career and I want to write full time. Even if that means putting out 12 books a year, which for me sounds like a nightmare. So, I mean, everyone gets to say what success looks like in their own mind when they do self-publishing. My advice would be to take some time to sit down and say, what do you want to do? I would rather write fewer books that I'm in love with, and that means it's going to take me longer to get to be a full-time author. And I'm okay with that. I wish it wasn't the case, but I have to be okay with that. And other people who I absolutely respect and adore have said, I need to be a full-time author. That is the career for me. And they've decided they're going to write faster. They're going to focus more on productivity. And they're going to be more right-to-market people. And it's working out great for them. And they deserve that. You know, you get to choose your path here. So take advantage of that and think about what you want.
That was... All of that was incredible, everyone. Thank you for your thoughts there. I always think it's really neat, and just to get those different perspectives. So here's another one for you, and this is maybe a little less about advice to self-published authors, and just I'm asking you to kind of imagine or maybe dream a little bit with this one. Where do you see fantasy as a genre sort of going in the next you know, whatever, 5 to 10 years, right? What things do you see that are happening as a genre or whatnot that you're kind of most excited about seeing where this goes in the coming years?
No one wants to jump into that one.
No, right.
I'll tell you my personal feeling is that I'm kind of glad that that Game of Thrones happened and it increased the fan base. People were more aware of sci-fi and fantasy. On the big screen and the little screen, it's kind of a new thing. People, you know, it's not just for nerds anymore, and that's great. That's wonderful. I'm glad, but I'm also glad that Game of Thrones is finished, and now we get to see what's next. You know, and then we have the idea. There's no way to tell what the next big thing is going to be. I mean, it just mm-hmm. doesn't work like that. I mean, we're always trying to reinvent the wheel, and so you get a lot of clones of that kind of thing, and that rarely works out. But what happens is something comes out of left field, and there's no way to predict what it is, and it's the next big thing. So I'm just waiting for the next big thing. What is it going to be? I'm excited about that.
The thing that will never change, and it doesn't matter whether you're talking about self-published or traditional, the things that will never change in any genre is critical mass for readers. A book has to find massive readers, and just like Michael was saying, it's impossible to predict what is going to bring those people. Like, as I've been told, you know, I have with my publisher now, I have marketing people and PR people and whole teams have been doing this for years. They're all very passionate about books. They're all extraordinarily impressive people. I always feel like the weakest link in the chain because it's like, wow, you guys have a pedigree that I can't touch. But one of the things they say is, you know, if we knew what made a bestseller, we'd do it every time. You know, and the fact is they don't, because they have no idea. It's alchemy. Some stuff turns into gold and some stuff doesn't. And it's timing and it's this and the other. So what I see coming is barrier of entry hopefully is lowering. I think things like self-publishing, things like Spiffbo, it's all changing the game. Technology's changed the game in ways that we didn't see coming and we still won't see coming. I think, you know, with this massive rise of audiobooks is just the start of it. So, you know, we are going to see more diversity in both not only the stories, but also the authors that are being represented. But all of that is all great and all positive. But at the end of the day, the books that are going to hit, the ones that are, whether they're self-published phenomenon or whether they're just the next big thing from the big five, there is almost no way to tell. And it's just sometimes those, you know, books just speak to a reader and it just happens for them and all the stuff clicks into place and it goes right and boom. I don't even know if that really answers it, but I do think we're going to start seeing a leveling of the playing field, you know, and the reason I bring that up is because, you know, we start seeing more writers of color and all of that. But you got to be careful about thinking that things are trends. It's like at the end of the day, we may get these diversity swells and that's excellent, but you can't market on that. You can't bank on that because as the playing field starts to level, it will still just be books that find their critical mass of readers and explode. I think that's the only, solid, like one thing we can definitely say for certain will happen.
Yeah, I was back earlier, I was talking about having bumbled into a lot of stuff. And one of the things that I feel like I kind of bumbled into by chance was I think I released The Sword of Kaigen without paying attention to the market at all at a time when people were really into Asian based high fantasy. And I just didn't know that at all. I had no idea. But I've always written non-Western based worlds. So I'm excited to see more of that developing because, and I obviously, I love Lord of the Rings. I love Western based fantasy worlds. But there's so much other stuff that is really cool too. So I'm excited to see more authors dipping into that. And along the lines of what Jonathan was saying, there are so many niches that don't get exploited when, you know, the number of people who are allowed to publish is limited. So I think there are probably like huge marketing niches with that. Jonathan was saying a critical mass of readers that we don't even know about right now.
Amen. Amen to that.
Sometimes, and you also have to think about like readers aging into a genre, because there's discussion about the changes in high fantasy and how it reflects like, oh, the people who were into Aragon when they were kids have aged up and now they like Game of Thrones. I don't actually know how about the correlation between those, but things like that. So sometimes I go poke around where the kids hang out, like in Wattpad, and I don't know anything about Wattpad, but I'm like, what is all this stuff? There's lots of K-pop based stuff that's completely foreign to me, but people are turning those concepts into fantasy concepts, and I don't get it. But as those readers age into adult fantasy, they're going to bring a lot of those influences with them. And I think that's really cool because, you know, it's just more ideas in the mix.
Right. The Royal Road is kind of like Wattpad for that. You just walk in and what is going on here? You know, a lot of lit RPG stuff. And
yeah, because like back in the day, there wasn't like anime influenced fantasy. And now anime influenced fantasy is huge just because of the generation that became adults recently. So I think that's fun to watch, but I would never try to predict it because I'd go insane.
Yeah, I think you really have to stick to writing what you love and kind of what you personally want to read and all the cultural influences that you've picked up, both, you know, from your own culture and from you know, media and interacting with other people will start to speak out to kind of, you know, the work that you're doing. It'll all shine through. But the exciting thing about where the future is going is that these niches are popping up, and there's more and more room for people to pick, you know, kind of broad themes like, you know, Eastern themed fantasy or really niche stuff like fantasy financial humor. And
for instance,
just as an example.
Right, because, you know, that's not something that people are like, I'm going to make it big in publishing, so I'm going to write about financial fantasy humor, right? You know, like, but you can do it, and you can put stuff out there, and you'll find people. And I, every day, look at Amazon or Goodreads and find some niche out there, either in fantasy or in romance or something, just something to add that pops up. And I'm like, that's a thing. People want to read that every day. And then you go and yeah, there's a whole fandom for it and they love it. Mm-hmm. That's wonderful. Cause that means that if there's something you've been thinking about writing, you can probably find some similar people as well.
Yeah. I think I can only really echo what everybody else has kind of said. It's like, I think that there's going to be so much more variety coming out of the genre, because, you know, with the rise of self-publishing, yeah, the gatekeepers as they were aren't as well, they're letting people through now, or at least people are just slipping through between the bars. But as to the whole sort of industry, I couldn't even predict where it's going to be in sort of 5 years or so. I mean, I've been publishing now for about 7 years, and the game has changed so much. It's, you know, it's almost unrecognizable from where it was 7 years ago. So I can only imagine that it's, as technology increases and, you know, gets better and all that, I think that it's going to continue to change, especially with things like Kindle Unlimited and all these other things coming out of the woodwork. So yeah, hopefully that makes sense. Sorry, it's like 2 o'clock. I'm falling asleep here.
Poor man.
Rob is a trooper, everyone. And so you've heard it here from five SPIFBO winners. First, we have no idea what's coming in the future, but it's going to be awesome.
Yes.
So
make that bold statement.
Well, hey, everyone. Thank you so much for your willingness to come on and chat a little bit and do this podcast together. I've really enjoyed it, and I want to thank you once again for your time.
Oh, no, appreciate it. Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thanks for organizing it.